If someone is after you for back taxes, it ought to be the IRS. But recall back in 2013 when nearly 2 million people got threatening phone calls from thieves claiming to be IRS agents. They were able to swindle 10,000 people out of more than $54 million. Until my next guest stepped in, that is. Timothy Camus is Deputy Inspector General for Investigations at the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. For his work in stopping this phone scam, he's a finalist in this year's Service to America Medals program, and he joins me now. Timothy, good to have you on.
Great to be here.
Tell us how this scam first came to the attention of the IRS.
In the fall of 2013, we started receiving a lot of reports from taxpayers who told us that they were receiving strange phone calls from individuals who were claiming that they worked at the IRS, and if they didn't pay something immediately, they'd be arrested the next day. So when we started seeing a lot of these calls, concentrated number of calls come in, we realized it was going to be a big scam.
Kind of unusual, considering that email is the most popular vector for this kind of thing. They were almost like reverting to something that they thought people would trust more than email.
That would be one way to look at it. You know, we have had, you know, a lot of phishing attacks over the last several years, which seems to be the preferred way criminals trick people into either providing information, giving access to their computer, or actually falling for other scams. So you're absolutely right. Going back to the phone was an old school method of scamming people.
And what else were you able to find out initially about, say, the source of the calls or the location they were coming from, or how, whether it was an organized ring or different people at random?
That was a very good question. You know, a lot of the people who called us reported that the people had very pronounced accents. It sounded like they were Indian dialect. And the interesting thing about this, early on, the reports were that the calls appeared to be being placed from within the United States. And as we did the investigation, we learned that the criminals were using spoofing technology that would make it appear on a caller ID or even looking at the phone that the call was in fact being placed from the IRS when in fact it was being placed from a computer overseas.
So the IRS 202 phone number was showing up on people's caller ID.
That's correct. Or even in some cases, some other local area codes where, you know, if you live, for example, in Virginia, you would look at your caller ID and you would see that it said 703, which is a prominent area code here. So that would lend you to believe, well, you know, they claim they're from the IRS and they claim they're calling from the local IRS office. And although I'm suspicious, I see it's a 703 area code. So maybe it's true.
How did you swing into action then? What happened? What did the IRS do as response initially?
Well, as criminal investigators, we always follow the money. And that's why criminals do crime, is to try to figure out a way to get at money. So what we were able to do was, when we started talking to some of the folks that got the call, we learned that a high number of them actually paid the criminals money. And we were able to use some of our law enforcement tools available to us to track where and how the money got converted. And then from there, we were able to identify some of the people that were picking up the money and running. And a large investigation ensued.
Now, was this simply the IRS work, or did you also bring in other federal law enforcement?
We had multiple federal law enforcement and even state and local law enforcement partners on a huge investigation. So what we learned when we got into it was the Department of Homeland Security was actually being used as well as a means of scaring people into paying money. So we joined with DHS, the Homeland Security Investigations Group. We also had the DHS Office of Inspector General involved. We worked a little bit with the Secret Service early on. And again, you know, the state and local police were great, and they were getting reports from their citizens about being scammed. And they naturally were happy to turn it over to a federal agency and work with us because their jurisdiction is limited to the area where they work. So it turned into a massive investigation headed up by DOJ that in October 2016, it ultimately resulted in the indictment of 56 individuals and 5 call centers located in India. And that was just one indictment.
That was one indictment, and there are others to follow? Or
yes, and over the course of time, we've either arrested or indicted and prosecuted over 70 people who've been responsible for hundreds of millions of dollars of this impersonation scam.
We're speaking with Timothy Camus, Deputy Inspector General for Investigations at the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. And while this was going on, did you have a command center? I mean, how did it work physically with all these different agencies collaborating?
Well, we opened up a national project, and we assigned it to one of our best and brightest young agents. And he was the focal point for it, but we leveraged technology. So, for example, we recorded over 1.9 million calls or emails from taxpayers complaining that they had received one of these calls. So we were able to use an automated complaint form, which allowed us to get all of that information in and then go through it and comb through it. Of that 1.9 million people, 10,000 of them reported to us that they actually paid money to the scammers.
And what was their means of payment?
You know, that was the interesting part. The payments initially started with Green Dot prepaid debit cards, which, believe it or not, is a form of payment, a way that the Bureau of Fiscal Services with the government sometimes gives people refunds. So it wasn't that unusual. It's a prepaid debit card that all you need to transact the money is the serial number off the card. So you can imagine why that would be valuable to the criminals. They didn't need to actually hold something. They actually had just had a number, and they were able to convert that to cash. Started with Green Dot, and then as our investigation progressed and we were working closely with the Green Dot legal team, they shifted, and we were putting out a lot of media and warnings about the scam and the use of Green Dot. They shifted then to Western Union and MoneyGram money orders. So again, we started working with Western Union and MoneyGram to try to get the word out and warn people that if they were told to pay their taxes using a Western Union or a MoneyGram mechanism, they were being scammed. So we started to get effective slowing that down. In April of 2016, they shifted to using iTunes cards, believe it or not.
My goodness.
Yes, to purchase iTunes cards. And again, the value in the iTunes cards and the reason they went there was because all they needed to convert the iTunes cards to cash was a serial number on the card. And they were being sold in a third-party marketplace, kind of an auction place where somebody could say, oh, well, you know, I got a $500 credit on iTunes. I'm willing to sell it for $300, you know, receive the money, and then in exchange give you the serial number on the card. And the end user, who had nothing to do with the scam, gets a $500 value in iTunes credits for $300. And when we follow the money and we see who activated the credit, well, there's not much we can do to them because they weren't involved in the crime. Very ingenious.
How did the serial numbers get converted into cash? Were there mules getting cash at some point and carrying it to whoever it was that was directing these operations?
Yes, early on, especially when they were using the money orders and the money grams with Western Union, they were actually having runners go to various places and pick up the instruments and then convert them to other monetary instruments like different. So, for example, if you had a money gram, you'd go and pick up a money gram payment, and then you would convert that money gram maybe to a different debit card or a different money order to make it more difficult for our investigators to follow the money.
And so that would happen in the United States at some point, and you could nab people at that moment?
Correct.
All right, so there are some people that are incarcerated because of this, even though there are some still probably at large in India and on to the next thing.
That's correct, and our investigation continues as well, but we have had some successful prosecutions.
And tell us about the rest of your life's work. You've been 31 years at IRS doing investigations.
Yeah, it's 32 years. I have been a lifelong federal employee my whole adult professional career. I started as an IRS agent, and somebody offered me a bribe, believe it or not, and I wore a wire for 2 years, and ultimately it ended up in the prosecution of 5 individuals for bribery of a federal official. At the conclusion of that cooperation, I converted to be a special agent and to do that kind of investigating work. And then in 1998, the IRS Inspection Service, which was the agency that I joined, was moved out of IRS and put under Maine Treasury as the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. That occurred in 1999, and that's my career. I've been here ever since.
It sounds like almost something of a calling for you, especially since you sounded like you were insulted at the idea of being offered a bribe.
You hit the nail on the head. You know, when somebody challenges your integrity and they think you can be bought, it really made me angry, and I was convinced that I wanted to be a person who would make a difference. So I figured the best way I could protect the tax system and do that type of work was by becoming an agent.
Well, we're glad you're on our side. Timothy Camus is Deputy Inspector General for Investigations at the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration and a finalist in this year's Service to America Medals program. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, and it is certainly an honor to be a finalist for that award because, you know, there are some great federal employees out there, and we're all working hard to work for America. So I appreciate the honor.
All right, and you can read more and find a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.